Because you're not. You could be drinking whole if you wanted to.
Definitely feel that temperature rising. Can you believe it? 84 degrees here on October 4th. Happy Thursday to you, or what I like to call Little Friday. Rick Britton live in studio. You know what's so funny? Just the other night I said to my daughter, I said, what would you think about if we changed Thursday to Little Friday instead of Thursday? And she got this very serious look on her face, and she said, can we do that? I said, I don't think we could do that, Daddy. So she's very opposed to it. She'd prefer to say Big Thursday instead of Little Friday.
October 4th, you sure it's not July 4th?
Does it feel like it? It's insane, isn't it?
It is.
Even hotter tomorrow, Rick. And just as hot on Saturday.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I'm one done. Of those people that, I'm one of those people that loves fall weather.
Same here.
The sweaters, the Same sweatshirts. Here.
Fall and spring are my favorite season.
We got some leaves falling. I mean, they're certainly falling in my yard, just a little bit. But it feels so strange. You go outside and the leaves are falling and it feels like summer.
And it's hot, yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's wrong, as Eric Cartman would say. Wrong.
I guess it's an Indian summer, I guess. An extended Indian summer.
Yeah.
Must be.
Or global warming. Global warming? Global is it supposed warming? To be this fast?
Yeah.
I mean, my wife is totally convinced. Is it this fast, or is it supposed to take a long time, like another 50 years or 100 years? I have no idea. Yeah. I never saw the Al Gore movie.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
Yeah, I did. We talked about this before. Yeah, it's really worth seeing, I think.
I probably should see it.
It really
at some
is
point.
Worth seeing. Yep.
Rick
yep.
Britton, local author and historian, joins us live in studio to talk local history. And you're in, usually coming on Fridays, but you came in today.
Strange.
Because tomorrow I'm clearing the deck to talk about the history of the Meadow Creek Parkway.
That'll be fun.
And I'm going to do a whole timeline history of car culture and the Meadow Creek Parkway in Charlottesville, all the way back to the very first car in Charlottesville, which interestingly enough, was mysteriously destroyed in a garage fire.
Wow.
And I'll tell you the whole history of the Meadow Creek Parkway as well, which was originally called McIntyre Road Extended.
Neat.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that tomorrow.
I'll be listening.
What do we have today?
Last week we were talking about Jefferson and science, and I had this long sidebar, and I thought we'd do that today. Jefferson and inventions. It's kind of funny. I thought about this a lot, you know, and working part-time up at Monticello, we encounter this all the time at Monticello. Everybody has the impression, and it's being propagated by modern historians erroneously, that Jefferson was a great inventor. And I guess it's a natural kind of thing. You know, it's easy to kind of slip into hyperbole with Thomas Jefferson. You know, we're used to thinking of him as the, you know, the great Renaissance man. The guy could do, you know, anything. And those famous quotes like the Marquis de the Chasteloup, who came here and said, you know, Jefferson in his early 30s, you know, he could play the violin, he could prosecute a case, he could design a neoclassical structure, he could tie off a vein. You know, the guy could do anything.
You just assume he was a great inventor.
Right. And so it's easy to just kind of slip and think, well, you know, all of these things. And then there's the other fact that in the house itself, there are many gadgets that are built into the structure. And of course, the house has been open in modern times since 1923, since the foundation, the Thomas Jefferson Foundation acquired it from Jefferson Monroe Levy. And, you know, in the course of that time, literally millions of people have passed through the house and seen all of these things. And so it's easy to just kind of slip into it. And there's some typical examples. This one really frustrated me in a work by a professor of science at Harvard University, Bernard Cohen, entitled Science and the Political Thought of the Founding Fathers. He wrote about how Jefferson had a special gadget of his own invention, the polygraph, for writing documents in duplicate. And then my wife, you know, my wife reads Vanity Fair, and in this month's issue, there's an article about how Americans have gotten lazy and blaming people like Jefferson and Franklin for starting it because Jefferson invented all these, you know, labor-saving devices. And one of the things they list, you know, is up at Monticello, the automatic double doors, which everybody gets to see as they go through the house, you know, in between the entrance hall in the parlor.
And there's the dumbwaiter in the dining room.
And the wine bottle dumbwaiter in the dining room, and the revolving serving door as you go from the dining room across the hallway to Mr. Madison's room.
And that funky thing in the front hall with the clock and the big ball that goes down into the floor?
The Great Plantation Clock. Great Plantation Clock. And the list goes on and on. I went online. I actually did a talk about this a couple of years ago. And so I did some research and I went online, and there's that great site about.com. And you can go on there, and along with Wikipedia, you can find articles on all kinds of topics. And on about.com, they were listing things like portable copying press, alcove beds, revolving chairs, spherical sundial.
All these things that he was, that people believe he invented.
Supposedly he invented.
Yeah.
Right.
And the truth is what?
And the truth is that he actually invented probably only a couple of things, and maybe only one. One thing. And that's the moldboard plow. Scientifically, he designed a plow. He called it the moldboard of least resistance. And the moldboard is the part of the plow that digs into the earth and turns it over. And he scientifically designed it so that it would turn over, you know, after digging in, I guess for a couple of inches, turn it over exactly once, turn over the sod, which is exactly what you want to do. You know, the other thing that he possibly invented is the wheel cipher. And we have a copy of a letter where Jefferson describes this device. It's a long spherical thing that has all these little dials on it that have the alphabet on it, and on each one. And you rotate them to create a code. And it's a device used to code and decode messages like people in the State Department might use, like the military might do. And supposedly, you know, a version of this was used by the United States military up to and perhaps including World War II a little bit, because it's a very safe, it's a very easy and cheap way to code things.
But as far as, we're talking with Rick Britton, as far as most of those gadgets that tourists see at Monticello, he didn't invent those.
No, he didn't invent those. And the thing to remember is Jefferson was a gadgeteer. You know, if he was alive today, I am certain he would love the internet. He'd be IMing and emailing all of his buddies. He'd be up, you know, on Wikipedia all night.
His MP3 player.
He'd be just going.
Hanging out at ACAC.
Yeah. No, he would be really into that stuff. He loved gadgets, and so he collected gadgets. He saw ideas in other places and brought these things back to Monticello, and that's the reason there's just such a huge collection of these items. For example, you know, the thing that Professor Cohen, who's a professor of the history of science at Harvard, the polygraph, he thought Jefferson invented the polygraph. Well, actually, it was invented by Dr. John Hawkins of London, and he granted the American rights to the patent to Charles Wilson Peel in Philadelphia, who was a close friend of Thomas Jefferson's. And that's why if you look at the device really close, you'll see a plaque that says Hawkins and Peel's patent polygraph number 57. You know, it doesn't say the Jefferson polygraph. So, you know, Professor Cohen needs to get himself some spectacles so he can look at things a little bit closer. And Jefferson famously wrote, he called it the finest invention of the age. I could not now, therefore, live without the polygraph. Of course, we joke at Monticello that Jefferson said, I could not now, therefore, live without a lot of different things. He said, I cannot live without books. You know, probably I cannot live without macaroni, all kinds of different things. The sundial, I thought, was kind of interesting. And the spherical sundial sits out on the east terrace. So as you're coming out of a tour, it's virtually right in front of you. And so the tourists, as they're walking out of Monticello on a typical tour, head right toward it. And there's a little article on the Monticello website that attributes this to Thomas Jefferson. But I really don't think that's the case. We have a letter from 1809, where Jefferson described the spherical sundial and the design of it to Benjamin Latrobe. But spherical sundials, if you bother to look them up, actually go back to the Roman Empire. And it's interesting, Vitruvius, who was a first century AD Roman writer, laid down the theoretical foundation for spherical sundials. They're also called armillary spheres, in a work that Jefferson had in his library. And so I believe pretty strongly that Jefferson saw this and decided he was going to, you know, build one of his own. He has a French translation of this work by Vitruvius that's called De Architectura. It was in his library. And so did he invent it? No, but he reintroduced something that was 1,700 years old into the United States. And there's a great quote of his that I think explains this kind of idea that Jefferson had, an 1813 letter from Jefferson to an Isaac McPherson. And he mentions his, quote, wish to see new inventions encouraged and old ones brought again into useful service. And
which he was very good at doing.
He was very good at doing, and that, I think, is the key to what he did.
And he not only did
with
it,
the spherical sundial.
He not only did it, Rick, with gadgets like the sundial, he did it with architecture, reaching back to Palladio and bringing, or with the
becoming,
you know,
America's first neoclassicist,
right. All the literature that existed at the time about democracy and freedom and liberty, none of that was new to Jefferson. I mean, read all that as a kid at Wayman Mary,
and and Madison did too. And some of the ideas for our new republic, you know, Madison studied for the other republics that had existed in history.
Yeah, yeah.
So a whole example of the founding fathers there kind of bringing the old into reuse, reintroducing them into
Much inventing, but finding the very best of the past.
Exactly. Looking back to the past and pulling forward the best for our own purposes for today.
And it also, you know, talking very realistically now and factually about Jefferson, I think it really sort of makes him more of a real person. He wasn't a great inventor. That we should, and this is what's so great about what you're saying, he was not a great inventor. I mean, that's a word you probably shouldn't use. There's a lot more you can use when you talk about
him.
He was a Renaissance man, but he was not this unbelievable inventor.
Right, and I don't mean this to detract from any of the other great things. I mean, I admire him tremendously.
It makes him more of a real person, I think.
It does. The automatic double doors that are famously showed off in every tour at Monticello, we actually saw in a book. The wine bottle dumbwaiters that everybody gets a big kick out of that come up from the wine cellar below the dining room up into the dining room, Jefferson actually saw those in Paris. They were famously displayed in a restaurant in Paris known as the Café Mécanique, Mechanical Café. And so he brought that idea, the revolving serving door he saw in a monastery. So great examples of Jefferson adapting.
Right.
Like he adapted other men's words for the Declaration of Independence.
Absolutely.
I think it's a great way of thinking of him.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a quick quiz we can do? Actually, you know what? Leave us the quiz. We're going to have to cut to news here at the bottom of the hour. But leave me the quiz, and we will do it, and we'll take winners in the next half hour.
Cool.
Is that cool?
All right. You want me to say what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go right ahead. Ask the question.
Okay. It's a Jefferson question. Who can name the three things that Jefferson wanted inscribed on his tombstone?
Ooh, that's a good one.
All the amazing things that he did in his life. He only wanted three inscribed on the tombstone of his own device.
And they were all about legacies. No title, but about things he did.
Right. Well, you gave a part of it away. There aren't any political posts.
No. They were all about his legacies and what he wanted to remember for the things he did.
The three things that he considered the most important that he had done in his life.
If you know, then give us a call at 977-1070, and we will give you lunch for two to Mickey Tavern. Thank you, Rick.
Thank you. Enjoy
it. If everything was free, I'd go to work whenever I want. I wouldn't need my salary, 'cause stores would just give stuff to me. If everything was free.
That was the latest from our studio guests. Hey guys, free is great. Where did you get the idea?